Welcome back to Upstate's Health Link on Air. I'm Linda Cohen. About 60% of all cancers and more than 70% of all cancer deaths occur in the elderly. But cancer care is hampered by a lack of data regarding the risks and benefits of cancer therapy in these older adults. So here to tell us more about new efforts to change all that is Dr. Ajit Gajra, Associate Professor of Medicine at Upstate Medical University and the Director for the Hematology Oncology Fellowship Program at the Upstate Cancer Center. Welcome, Dr. Gajra. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us more about this problem. Given that there's so much cancer in the elderly, why don't we know more about the efficacy of treatment for them?
Yes, Linda. As you pointed out, I think this is a major problem that affects our community, our population right now. As you correctly pointed out, there are over 60% of all cancers that are diagnosed in what we call older adults. We're slowly trying to get away from the terminology of elderly, but these older adults account for 60% of all diagnoses and 70% of all cancer-related deaths. So cancer is disproportionately affecting older individuals.
Can you tell us, when we say older adults, what ages we're talking about?
Great question. So there's still a bit of debate it goes on. And, you know, the definitions tend to vary a little bit across the globe. As you can imagine, in the industrialized world, people tend to age better oftentimes, and because the life expectancies are higher. Typically, we would say for Canada and United States, so for North America, the 65 is still considered the threshold for older adults. The same is true for Europe as well, although I must admit that we're getting to a situation where it's more likely that 70 might be a more reasonable cutoff with improved longevity. And so get back to your original question, individuals over the age of 65 are 11 times more likely to be diagnosed with cancer than younger individuals, and they are 16 times more likely to die as a consequence of cancer compared to younger individuals. So this problem is here, this problem is real, and we also have to recognize that our demographics are changing. We believe that between 2010, so 2010 and 2030, the number of individuals over the age of 65 is essentially going to double in this country.
Wow.
And by 2030, these individuals are going to account for 20% of the population. There's also another interesting demographic from the Census Bureau that by 2030, the fastest growing segment of population is going to be that of octogenarians. So folks who are 80 and older will account for the fastest growing numbers of older individuals. So
it's all about that boomer or the baby boomer pig in the python, so to speak, that big bulge in the population that travels through, across the lifespan. And
absolutely.
Now they're getting older and fortunately remaining alive and well, and so that affects all the numbers.
Right, absolutely. So this problem is real, and I think the bigger issue is that, as we all know, cancer is a heterogeneous disease. So there are several different, literally hundreds of types of cancer, probably even more. And while we have made a lot of progress in terms of discovering new therapies, understand that all of that work is done based on results of clinical trials. However, these older individuals who account for the vast majority of patients are often underrepresented in clinical trials because the impetus or the goals of clinical trials are to get a new medication to market well as soon as possible. And oftentimes, only the healthy and oftentimes, therefore, younger individuals are chosen to participate in these trials.
That's a key point, and that's, I think, what we were talking about, that because they're underrepresented in these clinical trials, we don't know enough about how to treat these older adults, even though they are the one, there's so much more of them in numbers who are affected.
Absolutely. So that's the big gap in knowledge, where we're conducting these trials in younger, healthier individuals. And then once the medication is available for general use, we're trying to use the same medications or the same combinations of medications or the same doses of medications for these older individuals who have several other issues at stake. They tend to have more health problems. They might be on several other medications. They have lower tolerance for the side effects. And therefore, there is surprisingly, despite having done this for several decades in the cancer field, the cancer community has not arrived at a consensus in terms of what the best way of applying these results to the older adults with cancer. And so I call this almost the silent majority, where the majority of the people are actually being underrepresented, and we don't know what the best way to treat them is.
But I understand that you're engaged in an effort right here at Upstate to change that. Tell us about it.
Yes, so it's been very promising, and it's been an exciting time for the last few years. I had the opportunity. So Upstate, just by way of background, is very active in the national cancer clinical trial research programs, both at the pediatric and at the adult level. At the adult level, we participate in several NCI-supported, so National Cancer Institute-supported clinical trials, which was formerly called the CLGB, or Cancer and Leukemia Group B. Now there's even a larger consortium that we're a part of, and it is called the Alliance for Clinical Trials. This is just excellent research, and I will also make a pitch. First of all, thank all of the doctors and patients who participate in clinical trials, and also make a pitch for ongoing participation, because that's the only way that we'll find good answers. But through this process, and through my local mentors here, like Dr. Komen, Dr. Graciano, Dr. Bogart, I was able to represent Upstate in a national consortium called Cancer and Aging Research Group. This draws researchers and cancer specialists, many of them who have specialty training not only in oncology but also in the field of geriatrics or the care of the elderly. And this group is tasked with just that. First of all, we want to integrate the care of the older adult with cancer. So we don't want oncology or cancer care and geriatrics to be two separate fields. We want to unify them and make it into the field of geriatric oncology.
So what are you, in this whole research group that you're involved in, what are you trying to do?
Right. So first of all, one of the major accomplishments thus far, and as you know, cancer research takes a while to conduct and also for results to come out. So this past year and a half has been an exciting time where we've been seeing the results of the studies that were conducted for the preceding 4 to 5 years. One of the earliest studies was how do we predict for toxicity, or in other words, how do we predict for risk of side effects from cancer chemotherapy in older adults who are receiving cancer chemotherapy? So this involved over 500 patients, across the country from several cancer centers. And we basically were able to come up with a tool or a matrix which might help the medical oncologist or the cancer doctor decide in terms of what the best therapy for a given older adult with cancer might be.
Which is the big lack,
correct,
it sounds to me.
Correct.
Because what you were saying before is that many oncologists weren't clear on the basis of earlier studies which would be the most effective treatment in these older adults. So you came out with some kind of a tool for them.
Correct. And so what we have to understand is that when we're dealing with the older adults with cancer, we have to take into consideration not just their age. And there's a tendency just to, look at age. However, again, we do have to remember, as has been said in many venues, age is just a number. We have to look at their physical function, because there are various barriers to what might prevent an older adult from tolerating chemotherapy. And it's not just age alone. It might be physical function. If they're in a wheelchair because they have a bad hip or they have difficulty walking, their comorbid conditions or comorbidities, if they have heart disease, kidney disease, liver disease, which tends to occur more as we age, that might restrict the use of some of the medications or increase the risk of side effects of various medications. Other factors have to be taken into account, like the psychological stage and their social function, their social support. If there's nobody to bring them to their appointments or for their treatments, then the treatments are not going to be as effective and the outcomes are going to be worse.
So you've been shedding light through this research group on all of these additional problems that the elderly face, and you've actually been involved in studies that have done what?
Correct. So this, for instance, this initial study took all of these factors into account. So normally we don't, because the clinic is busy and oftentimes doctors don't have the time to delve into each of these. But the goal was to come up with a matrix which is quick and which is feasible, which is not burdensome or hurtful to the patient. And, you know, a lot of the information actually by means of very simple questionnaires, the patient and the family are able to provide us with that information. We conducted initially pilot studies where it was demonstrated that this is, you know, patients like this, they don't mind it, and that they can accomplish it in less than 25 minutes.
So how does this matrix affect the oncologist?
Correct.
And therefore the patient?
Right. So using this, this is supposed to be a predictive model, and I must admit that, you know, this is the first step, and so this still has to be validated, which validation studies are ongoing. But with this, one can plug in various simple numbers or answers to various questions that are asked of the patient, very, very simple, and come up with a score which can help provide a predictive ability to determine what the risk of side effects is. So for instance, for those who are at very high risk of side effects with chemotherapy, the oncologist might want to consider other options, either lowering the dose of chemotherapy or choosing chemotherapy, which is simpler and known to have fewer side effects, or maybe in some circumstances, just instead of a multi-agent regimen, for instance, use a single agent regimen. This also helps uncover various other things, like nutritional deficiencies in the older adult, which are oftentimes not necessarily screened for, and also the other problem of polypharmacy. So a lot of the older adults on a variety of medications, you know, several, literally dozens of medications. And again, in the busy clinical setting, I think all of these are not accounted for or how they would interact.
So what I hear you saying in a layperson's terms, in my terms, excuse me, is that because the older adults have many, many more factors other than the cancer that are impacting on their entire state of well-being, that an oncologist really needs to be able to look at all of these factors, social history, psychological history, other medical problems, what other drugs they might be taking, put them into some kind of an equation, so to speak, or a matrix, and then figure out, therefore, how they might alter effectively what chemotherapy is that they might be choosing. So it really affects their treatment going forward. So what have you found? I don't want to run out of time.
Sure.
So using this matrix, have you found that it's made a big difference?
Yes. So this is, all of these components are essentially, when put together, they are something called a comprehensive geriatric assessment. The geriatricians have used this for a long time, but the oncologists have not. And so what we have come up with is an iteration which is easy to use in the clinic, and the results are very easily available. So what we found is that this discriminates the risk of toxicity much better than the traditional models that we've used. In the past, we've used things like, well, performance status or age, and that they themselves were not adequate in terms of their predictive ability.
Well, it sounds very exciting, and clearly this is a big problem as we, you know, the demographics continue along that same trajectory we've been talking about. There are going to be more and more people in that older age range who will be probably be affected and find themselves with a diagnosis of cancer. So this is very, very hopeful. This whole idea of geriatric oncology is very hopeful. I want to thank you so much for coming in. I know you're going to be involved in more studies and more of this kind of work, so it's wonderful that you're sharing. I hope you'll come back and tell us more in the future about what you're doing.
It's always a pleasure to be back here, Linda. Thank you for having me.
Well, my guest has been Dr. Ajit Gajra, Associate Professor of Medicine at Upstate Medical University and the Director of the Hematology Oncology Fellowship Program at the Cancer Center. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more HealthLink on Air right after this short break.